Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's Rick from Blind here with Kelly Scheib, who's the Chief People Officer at Crunchbase. Crunchbase is a prospecting platform powered by best-in-class proprietary data. It helps over 75 million deal makers discover, qualify, track, and engage with the right opportunities so they can search less and close more. Kelly has dedicated her career to human resources and the people field. Before joining Crunchbase as its first chief people officer, she led HR and employee relations at Proterra and Hubble Lighting. Thanks for coming on the show, Kelly.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
One thing that I find really interesting about your background is you chose to make a career in human resources early on, right? We've interviewed heads of HR and chief people officers before, and they often have this like interesting career path of how they kind of wound up in HR, but you sought it out. Can you walk us through that decision?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a bit of a unique in that aspect because I chose this as a profession from the very beginning. I knew I wanted to be in business and I knew I wanted to work with people. So that was really, it was really that sophisticated, I think that that has helped me. I think that that has hurt me in my career because I haven't had a ton of visibility functionally, like while in my roles, I have visibility to different functions, but I have never worked in a different function. So I do think that would be interesting to do. But my passion is people. It always has been. I've always really enjoyed that space and have loved the different opportunities that I've had in my career. So I think I'm sticking around in this space for quite some time.
We're stuck with you. You mentioned like this visibility. Can you walk us through kind of like how you partner with your colleagues in the C-suite? What is like the typical day-to-day like for a chief people officer?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question because I think most people don't really know. I would say that the C-suite for me as chief people officer, like that's our first team, right? So I wouldn't say that the team that I belong to is the people team. I would say the team that I belong to is the executive team. And I think everyone feels that way at Crunchbase, probably not exclusively all the time, right? Sometimes you feel like you're more within the functions, but our team is to drive the direction and the strategy of the business and ultimately the teams under us that we lead support that. But I mean, we're in close connection all the time with every member of our executive staff. That's just part of the way we operate within Crunchbase. Not dissimilar to the way I operated in the other roles where I've led the people function.
Now, how did it become chief people officer? Because it went from like personnel back in the day, right? To HR to chief people. Like it's a rebranding almost, right? Is it my imagination or this is
no,
like
that's a big change? Oh, that's the greatest question in the entire world. Because I love that question, because I have been known on bad days to call up different team members and be like, oh, we work in HR today. I don't want to work in HR today. And I think it's the evolution of it's how the people function has ultimately evolved. And, you know, once upon a time, it was like very tactical block and tackle, you know, you get the form, you input the form, you put it away. And then the HR space got a bit more involved and had, you know, more influence, but not a ton of influence. There was this like very tight pull for a seat at the table. And that's kind of like in the early 2000s when you were seeing all the articles about like the seat at the table, the seat at the table. I remember someone once saying like, would you stop asking? Just sit. I was like, that's the way to do it.
But just show in a board meeting, right? Just
hold the chair.
What are they going to do? Throw you out?
Well, I did work for a company that locked all the doors during a board meeting of a floor. That was the funniest. I was like, wow, could you be more tone deaf as it were? But I think that, I think that as we've evolved into the people function, I think the world now understands that the people organization plays a significant part in the success of any organization, because people play the most significant part in the success of any organization. So I think you've seen the evolution of the people function. I always want to work for the people function, right? Because I'm there for people. I never want to work for, like, I never want to work for personnel ever. I won't ever work for personnel again.
And do you notice, like, are you seeing, because I've written a lot about this stuff, where from the pandemic on, just such a change, you know, in terms of what people want, what they expect, you know, whether remote work, hybrid work, they want to have their mental health taken care of, they want to avoid getting burnt out, you know, they want to be maybe have flexible schedules, you know, flexibility to choose where, when. Are you seeing that with your company and across the board, where companies, either companies are really doing these things or some that are just not doing these things and not taking care of their people?
Yeah, I mean, that's every article everywhere, right? So you're absolutely seeing the value proposition for the employees and what the total reward strategy of a business need to evolve towards the employee, the full employee. 100%, you're seeing that everywhere. I think the companies that are gonna get left behind are the companies that want to behave in a more traditional way, where, I actually do a little bit of teaching as well. And I was reading one of my students' papers this week, and it was a total rewards topic. And they're like, my company offers health insurance and dental insurance and vacation. I was like, wow, super. That is, it's just, those are table stakes at this point, right? There really is an evolution to ensure that the rewards that you offer an employee at this point really fit the value prop of the employee. Now, I will tell you this. I do believe that HR folks tend to be very, very, very prescriptive in their approach towards total rewards, meaning they write one prescription and they say, this is the reward for the business. Have fun, business. And that doesn't work anymore. I think the day of like, I really think we should roll out this benefit and everyone will love it, I think those days are gone. I think that we really have to be wildly intentional about how it is that we think about rewards in a very individualistic approach. I always like to say audaciously individualistic is the term we should be thinking about when we think about benefits for a business.
That's so interesting you bring it up, because just the other day, Rick and I interviewed Alyssa, and I can't recall her last name, Rick. I don't know if you could help me out with that. She works for Edelson, big PR firm, but it's in the employee space. And that's exactly what she was saying, is that what they're trying to do is customize it, because it's not one size fits all. That not, you can't just say remote work, because that not might not be right for everybody. You may have like younger cohorts who are just starting out their career who should maybe go in the office and so forth. So is this a trend that like, or is it kind of maybe people like yourself and Alyssa are kind of picking up on this and maybe it's going to grow from there?
I actually don't see it as a trend. I would like to see it as a trend.
Yeah.
I don't know why, right? But you still see, and even when you talk to, if I lined up 50 of my closest and dearest HR colleagues, I think that you would see the same thing. Like, oh, we're going to roll out this really amazing benefit and it's going to be great. You know who those benefits generally serve? They generally serve the human resources function who came up with them, or whoever came up with them thinks it's a great benefit.
Because it's good for them. Is that what it is? Like, okay, I have kids.
They're like, so it's going to be fabulous. Like the companies, like my favorite are like a gym benefit, right? Like a gym benefit's like the perfect example, right? Like what if I have a gym in my basement? I don't want your $100 for that, but I really need your $100 to like pay for Starbucks, right? Like just something silly like that. The whole, you know, I firmly believe that you have to meet people where they are. People are individuals. Not taking an individualized approach towards what people need, I think is going to be like the fall of a lot of cultures.
It makes so much sense, because like when she was talking about it, was Alyssa talking about it, I had that aha moment, because I was thinking very linear, you know, where, okay, remote work, hybrid work, in-office work, and that's what it is. And then when she said, well, no, it doesn't have to be that way. Let's customize it. Let's exactly what you're talking about. And then you know, the light bulb went on. I'm going, yeah, that makes way more sense. You know, somebody who, like, my kids are older now would have different needs than someone who has like a newborn, you know, completely different. Or if I had an elderly parent I would have to take care of, that's going to be completely different as well. And you know what I mean? So yeah.
That's why we're the people function, right? Because we're thinking about the person, not this global prescriptive type HR, right? It's, I just think that day has to be done. I think employees expect it and we should deliver on it. And quite frankly, like, who doesn't want benefits that are more customized to them, right? Who doesn't want an organization that cares about you as a person versus, you know, the global, like, I really think it's a really great idea to have this one gym benefit at this one gym, go there, right? Like, I just think, and companies do that all the time.
So how would you, so let's say with Crunchbase, if you had the ability to do this, what would you say to, you know, whoever you have to pitch it to say, okay, here's what I think we should do for the company and like the different kind of offerings?
We have that question. We have that conversation within Crunchbase all the time. What's really cool about Crunchbase is like the executive team and the business is just so open to thinking this way. They're open to thinking very like individualist, like in that very individual customized approach. I think that, you know, I refer to it as live your best life. Money, right? So that's what I'd like to see at Crunchbase. And I do think that you just have to figure out your budget and you have to figure out what that looks like for individuals and allow them to, what I refer to as live their best lives, right? Everyone's different and meeting people where they are, I think, is super important.
I want to like dig in a bit deeper, right? As you imagine, total rewards, total compensation are very popular topics on Blind. Like, how does a
they
company...
are why? No, I'm kidding.
Right? It's like a little foundational, right?
Well, they are now, right? More so than before when like they were making crazy money. Now, all of a sudden, right? It's changing.
Right. And can you kind of walk through, you mentioned this tech term, like total rewards philosophy. Like, how does a company decide, you know, where they want to be on like kind of quote unquote, like benchmark against their competitors, or how do they set up these, you know, pay bands or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, those are really great questions. And it all goes back to the mission of the business, right? So you link all of these strategies back to the type of organization that you want to be. Everything should link back, right? The companies that have done it best in the past have been like the Googles of the world, right? Like they've done a good job linking it. I think sometimes you can lose yourself as you scale a bit. And I think that's why you struggle in some aspects. But you know, when you're thinking about a total rewards philosophy or a compensation philosophy in general, the first thing you want to think about is who you want to be as a business. What kind of organization are you going to want to be for the employees that you serve? And then you build it off of that, right? Employee value proposition for employees is, you know, and then you hire people like that. But like, when you think about an employee value prop for employees, they're different, right? And you can hire employees who think that the value prop that you're delivering is good, right? And then the employees who don't think so don't join your organization. And I think that that's okay.
Oh, so that like self-selecting out is actually intended by the employer side.
I mean, I think it's okay to say as an organization, I can't pay at the 120th percentile of a pay band. You have to be okay with that, right? You have to be okay with that. And as an organization, if your strategy shifts and this is just talent that you're unable to get, you flex, right? I don't think compensation strategies in general and comp philosophies in general, those are fluid documents. While they're grounded in the mission of your business and the vision of your business, they are fluid documents that you should revisit quite often.
See, Kelly, that makes so much sense because I'm just visualizing this. Let's say the economy goes on what it is, kind of, you know, a little worrisome about how it's going to play out. And the stock prices are dropping for these, like Rick was mentioning before, for these big companies. So that I wonder whether it's Crunchbase or other companies, you lead with not, okay, here, we're going to pay you this. But if you come here, you could have a gym membership you're going to have, and then you could itemize all the cool stuff. And then you're competing on, hey, it's the whole well-being that we're trying to help you with, you know, try to give, you know, competitive salary, but give you all these other things. And people might say, hey, you know what, this is great. Because by saying that, it shows that you really care about me and you want me to bring me in. I might not love every single, you know, benefit you're offering, but I respect that you're doing that. And that's kind of cool. That means you're actually paying attention to what we need. And that's much nicer because you don't see that in job descriptions.
You don't. And like, look, people have different value propositions, right? Like Crunchbase is a fully remote organization. That's that there is a cost to that, right? There's like an intrinsic value to that, right? That we offer that others don't. Or if we offer extreme flexibility in the way we think about our benefit structure, there is a value to that. How employees think about it is really up to them. And we want employees who are as excited about it as we are.
Do you think, because you mentioned Google, do you think that's going to change now, where there's a belt tightening mode going on, where, you know, Google and all these other places that have these lush benefits might start just pulling them all back?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes. Yes. I think you're seeing it. I think you're seeing it everywhere. I think you're actually seeing it with some benefits that are, in my opinion, I think dangerous to pull back on. I think you're seeing, like for instance, you're seeing pullbacks on things like parental leave, which I think is...
I don't know. They're doing that, really? You see,
some people are pulling back on like paid parental leave or how much paid parental leave they're offering, which I actually think is kind of nuts. You see pullback on mental health leaves, or mental health days. I think that's kind of nuts too. Like, did the world all of a sudden get like rosy and rainbows and sunshine everywhere? Like, does mental health not matter anymore? Like, I think that's kind of nuts. My philosophy on this is, like, I have a pretty firm philosophy on this. I think organizations have to be wildly careful about what they're willing to roll out, because pulling back benefits always stings. So I would rather approach things from a place of, look, we're going to give you this, but this sticks, right? It's sticky within our organization, than throw these lush benefits at folks only to have to claw back, because clawbacks are terrible. Like, I've never seen them work well in my entire life. Like, my goal would be to never have to claw back a benefit.
Like, imagine if Meta took away free laundry services.
That's serious.
And you couldn't take your food in the box and bring it home to your family.
But you want to know what? Like, at the end of the day, that was part of the value prop that brought them there. Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying that, Kelly, is because that was a big, for a while, on Blind, that was a big thing where people were going ballistic, to your point, about like, hey, you're taking this away. We had this. And to the outside world, it could be like, oh, come on. You're making enough money. You're making a total comp of $800,000. You could afford your own laundry. But it's the takeaway hurts more than when they give something. You know, like, I don't know how to describe that way. Like, when you take it away, it hurts you much more than like when you get something. So it's just kind of a lopsided and you end up being really upset.
I mean, that's like just basic psychology, right? Like, go take a toy away from my 3-year-old and see how happy she is about it, right? Like, and there is, especially when you're screaming from the rooftops, like some of these orgs do, about the culture and about that being built into the culture. Now you've just taken away something that is like foundational to culture. So I just think that you have to be just so careful, so careful. I oftentimes talk to HR leaders who are like, we're going to roll this out. I was like, no, you're not. Because when times get hard, you would take those things away. No one's going to like you. So I think you just have to be really careful, which is why I am far more supportive of an individualized approach, because that's just bucket of dollars, right? And people get to like flex in and out what they use that bucket. And as long as you can feel pretty confident that bucket will not necessarily move, and people have the optionality to do with it what they wish, it doesn't necessarily have to go away versus like pulling the laundry service. I know those are like silly things to talk about, but I think you understand that like those things are like become who you are as an employer.
And no, I think that's a right approach, right? Like at Blind, we have a work from home stipend where you can use it for utility bills or you can use it for takeout and groceries. Like it's just anything that might involve, you know, making your work at home, like remote experience, just a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really kind of an interesting approach. I had never seen it before in my career, right? Usually it's exactly like you said, very prescriptive. Like, this is your gym benefit. It can't be over this amount. It has to be within these cities, right? Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, great. And I think like that has to be the future, right? Or I'd hope that's the future of just having things that work for you. You know, like how many people on Blind go and complain and say, great, you know, we have this like huge menu of benefits, but the only things that I really use are like maybe five of them, right? Like all of these other things are just fluff. Or like, why do we have them here?
Yeah, I think that's I know all about the menu of benefits, and some of them aren't really even benefits. Some of them are like, you can make anything look good, right? Like I would rather be real and say like, these are the things we offer. You're like legit going to get these things, or you're going to have the optionality to choose. I think like to your point about it being the way we'll move, I hope it is the way we'll move.
You don't sound too confident.
I think what you're seeing is, I think it depends on what the economy ultimately does. I think what you're seeing is evolution that way, but I could see the pendulum swing back slightly, right? Like I could see, and you're already starting to see it, right? Companies tightening belts, companies saying no. And that's, I hate when organizations are so boastful about things they eventually have to pull back on. That just doesn't seem authentic to me. And I want to work for an authentic org. I want to be part of an authentic org. So I do think like if the economy shifts to a really bad place, you will see like tightening and you'll see more of that individualized approach go away. And then when you need to hire the people, all of a sudden the super sexy benefits will make an appearance again, right? Like, I think that that's just evolution. I saw it in 2008, saw it in, you know, the early part of 2000s. And then obviously we're seeing it now.
Can you walk us through what is happening across like boardrooms and executive, you know, Zoom calls all across the country in terms of this tightening up? You know, we've heard of terms, you know, Jack's written about this, you know, you have these quiet layoffs, or like just any quiet with any word, it seems like is the new trend of like these like secret or like just like these like moves that companies are making. You know, what is kind of the logic there? Are they just trying to avoid the bad press of, you know, having to do layoffs, or you know, what are these like ways that they're kind of cutting back without, you know, just being explicit about what they want to do?
I mean, I can't speak to that universally. I can tell you Crunchbase isn't doing any of that because Crunchbase has a philosophy of true transparency, you know, thoughtful transparency, right? Where we're having conversations with our employees. Like, quite frankly, I came from a public org, a company that went IPO in my existence with them. Like, Crunchbase is transparent to a place where I'm like, oh, are we allowed to share that? Like, oh my goodness, right? Like versus my last org where it was like lockdown, cover your mouth, like masking tape, like you are not allowed to say anything. Insider, like my sweet GC at my last org was like, scared me half to death. I was so afraid I would say the wrong thing and I'd end up in jail. I was like, I don't look good in orange. Don't ever like. So I think that it is, while I think you're seeing some of that, I think the rubber will meet the road at the end of the day. And if a company is going to have layoffs, they're going to have layoffs. And I think it's impossible nowadays to avoid some of the press you'll get if that's the decision that you make, because employees are talking about it, right? Like you do nothing more than go to your LinkedIn feed, and employees are, I will tell you one thing though, like employees are very vocal about it, but employees also remember how they're treated in the process, right? They will 1,000,000% remember, and you see it, right? You see it like, I want to thank this employer. I want to thank you for doing that. And like, you also see like, I was called on a Zoom meeting and they laid off 900 of us. Like, worst thing in the world. Like, people will remember how they're treated, no matter how you treat them. And that will either be good for you or bad for you.
Are there other things that companies, you know, we talked about the benefits. Are there other companies, other things that companies are kind of doing right now to kind of like batter down the hatches for this upcoming kind of like recession, stagnation, economic situation?
I think employers are being responsible with their spend, right? So I do think you're going to see less hiring, maybe even some hiring freezes. You know, Crunchbase is still hiring, but you're seeing it everywhere that, you know, we're not hiring as many. You're also seeing like eliminations of entire functions that aren't needed right now, like talent functions. Marketing is getting hit left and right. Sales is getting hit left and right. Engineers don't seem to be getting hit left and right. Which makes sense, right? Because that's really, that's, you know, there aren't as many of them as probably the need. I do think you'll see spend get more controlled. It's really interesting. I would be really interested in seeing this is whether or not like spend on like infrastructure, like offices and things of that nature. Like, you know, there's this giant push to like return to an office, like whether or not when like they start to like board up their windows and doors, they'll be like, ooh, maybe we should send people home and like get rid of the space. Like, you know, companies are economically driven. So like, I really wonder whether or not like you'll see an about face on like, ooh, I can get rid of this floor. Let's go hybrid, everyone. When they're like screaming up and down about like button seat 5 days a week. I think there's a story there. Like, I would be really interested in seeing if the economy turns further south, like whether or not you'll see organizations be like, I think we can save so much money on infrastructure.
You know, it's starting to happen. I'll give you an example. I'll speak to this guy, Mark Dixon. He's the person behind IWG, like the Regus chain. Yeah, they were like, WeWork before WeWork became a thing. And basically he was telling me that that's exactly what's happening. You have a lot of these big companies saying, hey, we may not get rid of everything we have, but we're really downscaling our real estate footprint to save money. And then also what they're doing, he's noticing a big trend, is having offices in the suburbs. So that, like, you know, his contention is that people don't mind if you're just going to commute like 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, you know, kind of locally. And then maybe you just do that hybrid. So that, yeah. So I think what you're saying, it is starting to play out that way.
What's fascinating about that to me is like how authentic do organizations look when they scream from one end about like, come back in, we need you, collaboration and culture and all the things. And then they're like, oh, times are hard. Let's shut it down. It is baffling to me to see organizations talk out of both sides of their mouth, and to think that employees don't see that and employees aren't going to like vote on whether or not they want to work for that kind of organization with their feet is, you know, I just think it's interesting.
Well, it goes to your point about like, oh, well, actually, a lot of what HR does is actually quite rational, right? It serves their interest or their need, or obviously the company's need. I mean, there's this term, you know, it came out during the whole like Elon Musk Twitter acquisition, where, you know, all these texts came out publicly, right? And someone texted Elon and said, oh, well, what you should do is there's something called a gentleman's layoff, where you just bring everyone back to the office and you know, the text went, I guarantee 20% will leave right there. And so that's an easy amount of people that you don't have to, you know, deal with or pay severance for. You know, that could be the trend, right? Like there's some people that are clearly out there thinking it, saying it, right? Maybe that is what we'll start to see the headlines in the new year.
I caution against that. And I guess what I would say is people remember how they're treated. Right? To quote Hamilton, right? Like history has its eyes on you, right? Like people are going to remember this. Yes. Right. And I think that, you know, I saw it in 2008, right? I saw it when I lived it in real life. Like you go, I remember in 2008, coming back from maternity leave to lay off people and then having the nerve to call them back in 2015 to say like, hey, we have this amazing opportunity here. Do you want to come back? And they're like, you're so funny. No. And I just, people are going to remember that, right? Like there are organizations I'll never work for again because of the way I was treated. Right. And I know that that's true for lots of people.
And then word spreads too. So like, you know, you tell somebody and they hear that story. Oh, I'm never going to work there. Oh my God.
More aggressively now than ever. Right. Right. Like word is going to spread more aggressively now than ever. And it now, granted, I will say this. You can read between lines on some of the things that are posted because not everything is based in facts. So I think like there's something to be said about that, right? Like you see a lot of employees out there who are yelling and screaming about things that may not be based in full facts. And I've seen that in real life. But I do think word spreads more aggressively now than ever. And like, you know, that's the reason when you hear about some of these organizations, like everyone on your block will be like, oh, I heard that's a bad place to work. Don't go there. Right. And that influences decision making.
Now, I don't know if you see it from what, you know, because you obviously focus on the HR side, you know, you kind of see all these VCs, you see all these startup companies. Do you kind of get any vibe check of like what's happening? Is it much slower? Is there still a lot of activity or certain areas hot and others are just cold? Do you follow that part of it?
I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, the conversations that I have with different members of the teams and different orgs and things of that nature, I mean, I think you are seeing a slowdown, right? I think you are seeing like a board up the houses, prepare in the event of the hurricane and hope that it misses you. And that's kind of, but it is the weirdest conversation in the world because at the same time, unemployment is so low, right? When you normally see like the boards going up on the windows, you're also seeing like insane amounts of unemployment are insane, but like you're not seeing that. So it's a very weird dynamic now. It's like the weirdest dynamic because you're like batten down the hatches, still give everyone 1,000,000% raises because you don't want them to quit because you may not get them back, right? Like it's a very interesting dynamic. I've never seen it in my career.
It's bizarre, right? Because there's still, well, I mean, just the other day, what was it? Percent growth in the GDP. So it's like, all right, well, that's not the definition of a recession now because we're having growth. Right. And then, like you said, is what still what, Rick, maybe 10 million people, 10 million jobs still open. I'm not sure what number it is, but it's something still like huge.
More than two people per open job. Right.
Yeah. So like you think about it from where I sit, like I'm sitting here having conversations about comp planning. We're going through a whole comp analysis right now. And I'm like, so like, do I want to pay more? Or do you want to pay less? Like what's the deal? I'm not really sure. Like it's a very interesting dynamic. And look, at the end of the day, Crunchbase is always going to do right by its employee, but everyone's having those conversations because you don't really know how to attack this monster.
I mean, are you seeing like a downward pressure on compensation across the board when you see, you know, these companies that have traditionally paid the most, Google, Meta, where it's primarily been in stock-based compensation, and now their stocks are tanking, right? And so we're suddenly seeing a lot of these people feel like they're getting, you know, 10, 15, 20% pay cuts because of that stock differential. You know, they primarily, like, I imagine, push the startups, like, to pay more to compete with, right? And so I mean, are we seeing, you know, is it easier to hire for if you're a startup? So now that you don't have to compete with these big tech guys, or, you know, what's that trend there?
I mean, I will tell you that I am not seeing that, right? Like I still think that the big companies are still able to throw so much equity at folks that people still make those decisions quite often. I've actually had more success in my career hiring away from like a Google or
interesting.
Yeah, I've had more success in my career doing that than necessarily like if you've got a Google offer and like another startup offer, like which one do you pick? But it's easier to pull away. I've had, yeah, just and honestly, it's because like cashed out or they did their time and now it is, you know, it's time to, you know, they have it on their resume, they're golden.
Interesting. Because that's the one fear that a lot of folks on Blind have, right? So there's a lot of kind of like piling on, teasing like these companies that are struggling and going through these like, you know, their stock prices, their share prices are going through a tough time. And there's some folks on Blind that are saying, wait a minute, I'm kind of looking ahead and seeing, hey, we actually should thank these folks. These are the reason why, you know, engineers make so much money or something like that. But I guess it's definitely like a more holistic view, right? Where it isn't necessarily like companies make these decisions for their own needs, and maybe perhaps they're not adjusting as quickly as you know, hey, I had earnings last Thursday. Maybe I could like lowball folks this week, right? It's not that quick.
No, it's definitely not that quick. But I do think you're having, I think anyone who's in the comp space, and I think the executives are having these conversations, like how do you attract talent now with decreasing values? Like, no, I can tell you from the public company world, my experience will tell you if you're seeing like a decreasing stock price, you're paying more. Right. Or you're handing over more equity, right? On the base side. We won because it's not worth as much, right, to the candidate. Right. Right? And then but I still think that the big players out there just can give so much that at the end of the day, the value is still so grand. But so I think that what will be interesting is like you might get them, but are you gonna keep them? Maybe that's not their goal. Maybe their goal isn't to keep them. Maybe their goal is to let them do their little, like I've always said, like I wasn't in the business of training someone else's engineer. Like I always said that, that wasn't the goal for me. But maybe it's okay to have some more of that flex for some of these orgs.
I mean, that's really interesting, right? Like I always scratch my head when some companies, they seem to churn through folks in less than a year. And you, exactly like you said, you spend so much time training folks. Like what value is there? You know, wouldn't you be incentivized as an organization to keep them longer, at least to kind of get your return on the training even?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not something that I've ever aspired to do, right?
Of course.
The goal is to have people come and stay. Now, while I believe that we'll never see a generation again that stays for a lifetime in any employer, I do think that it's very reasonable for employees to stay for a minute and, you know, get an opportunity to work within the business and grow within the business. I think you do have to provide more opportunity for growth and much more defined opportunity for growth than probably was expected in the past, but certainly is something we think about all the time.
Yeah, I think, Jack, maybe you want to write about this. I recently read there's some industries like the trades where if you leave within a year, you actually owe the company a few thousand dollars for that training. Like, you know, you'll have to like pay an exit fee to reimburse that company. And it's like very
common. I saw headlines like that. So is that when you say trades, like a plumber, carpenter, that trades? Is that what
you mean? Yeah, or like a, you know, like a mechanic on like an airline and that kind of thing.
Well, you see that with like sign-ons, right? Like you see that with sign-on bonuses all the time, right? True, yeah. Like you give you a $20,000 sign-on, you leave within a year, you're paying that sucker back. Yeah. I paid back my first sign-on bonus, my first job out of college. left in 90 days, paid back money.
What happened? You went there just feeling this is not for me. I'm cutting my losses.
Oh my God, it was a disaster.
Oh no.
That's a story for a different day. It has, I've given speeches on that one. That was a disaster.
Okay.
What's the cliff notes? Come on, you teased us about
it. Yeah, exactly.
I joined an organization, a very, very well-known public org. It's nowhere on my resume, so you won't be able to find it, but it is. And I lasted 90 days. I joined an org as an HR manager in training right out of grad school, but what they didn't tell me was they had outsourced the majority of their HR to Costa Rica. So an employee would come in with a question and they'd give everyone a business card and they'd say like, here, call this number in Costa Rica. So like, I was like, so they actually put me on third shift in the sanitation department. Okay. Killing bugs. So like I used to put on like one of those like book bags of like insecticide. Like it was like a backpack. It was like a Ghostbusters backpack. You guys ever watch you ever see Ghostbusters? Yeah. They had like the power packs where you like pull them out and like squirt the ghost. Like I had one of those, except it had like bug killer in it.
Oh gosh.
And I would like walk around on third shift killing bugs.
Oh my gosh.
And it was not for me. Like I would say it was not for me. So I made the decision to leave, but I will tell you every decision in your life ultimately leads you to where you need to go. I firmly believe that. And that's been the story of my entire career. And I've been very fortunate to I read a quote this morning that said like, sometimes when the puzzle is breaking, like maybe it's just falling into place or something along those lines, the butcher of the quote. But essentially like they all led me there. That role led me to Hubble, which led me to my first VP job at Tyndall, which led me to Proterra, which ultimately led me to Crunchbase. So it's been a perfect journey. And somehow in the middle of that, I ended up in South Carolina, which is like a place I never in a million trillion years ever thought I'd be. So.
It is wild how that happens. A lot of times it's just luck. So good luck, bad luck. So maybe that bad luck was good luck for the future, saying, hey, you know what? Maybe you could have been stuck in this job and it'd be okay. Put aside killing the bugs, but just, you know, just a rotten job and you feel obligated. You know, it's my first job. I wish I'd stay there at least a year. And maybe that would have changed for the worse. And it turned out to be the best thing that happened to you, perhaps.
It was. And I've had the opportunity to tell that story a million times. And I probably talked some people out of that company. And but I had to pay back my bonus, right? And back then I was 23 years old. I had no money. My husband and I like were financing like a $300 couch. And it was like a $7,500 bonus. And I had to write a check for $7,500. And I was like, oh.
Oh, that hurts
so bad.
But you would think if like they misrepresented the job, why do you have to pay that back? That doesn't seem right either. You know, if they send the job description, you're going to dress up with, you know, yeah, in a garbage bag, like a ghost bug buster costume. Like, okay, I signed up for that. You didn't sign up for that. That's not too fair.
I will tell you, like,
what's their number? Let's call them up now.
I don't know. Kelly Scheib of like today may have made a better argument, but like 23-year-old, I wasn't even Kelly Scheib at that point. It was like, I don't know what to do. Like I called my dad. Like I was like, what do we do?
Yeah. That's sometimes companies really do take advantage of people. It's so unfortunate.
But people remember how they're treated.
Right. Go on blind and find that out as well, right? And
remember.
I think, you know, I one thing that I'd love to get your kind of like final piece of wisdom is, you know, like, do you have any advice for people that, you know, they're seeing hiring freezes, they're seeing rescinded job offers, they're seeing layoffs. Like that seems to be what all the headlines are in the especially the tech media. You know, how does someone kind of think about their job prospects, their career, whether they're, you know, looking for something or currently in their role, like how should they kind of interpret this environment?
Yeah, that's hard. Look, this is a moment in time. We've been here before. And many of the people that are probably living through a lot of these, maybe they haven't been here before. but I've seen this happen more than once in my career. And this is a moment in time. But this is what I will say is you own your career. Company doesn't own your career. You own your career, which means that this is your moment to continue to network. This is your moment to continue to build on your skill set. I mean, these are your times. I always say that, like, you should, employers will take from you, right? They are paying you for their services, but you're learning something in return. Make sure you're learning the things that propel you to the next level. Like, I oftentimes will say, and I mean, I still do this. I will go through the LinkedIn profiles of some of the most sophisticated people in the people space just to see what they're doing, to make sure I'm doing it too. And to make sure that I'm getting those experiences too, and knowing where my gaps are, that's something that, like, I still do, and I've always done it. And I think that employees should still think about their world and their career in terms of the gaps, and, like, do everything, even in this period, to fill your gaps, because that will only help propel you into the future. But don't expect anyone to own your career for you. You own your career. And you have to be tenacious enough to do it.
I think that's really smart advice. It makes so much sense, because when I started recruiting, if I had a candidate who was only there for a year or 2 years and moved, they wouldn't even want to take, you know, that person. Like, what are you doing? This is, you know, it's only 1 or 2 years. This person's a job hopper. Fast forward to now, I think people get, well, I'm going to go work at a place, and if it serves my needs and I'm learning, and I like that you're saying that, because that's what it really is. I think what you know, you need to kind of keep learning, networking, building your network, get more skills. And then if you can keep growing with the company, great. But if you feel like, all right, it's over, you owe it to yourself to say, all right, maybe I like the people here, I want to stay, but I owe it to myself to go to keep learning and keep growing. Otherwise, I'll just stagnate. And I think that's the key, right? I think that's what you really have to do.
And companies have to be realistic about that as well. Like, I do think sometimes companies hold on for dear life, despite the fact that you're holding an employee back. Like, I've had conversations in my career with even direct reports of mine who I've said, like, look, I'm not serving you anymore. Like, wow. Go be an ambassador of this organization, like, and say good things, but go live your best life somewhere else. And if there's an opportunity later where you can boomerang back in, like, you're welcome.
See, that's right? Great. If you have a manager who could do that and be so empathetic to say, hey, it's going to hurt me because I'm going to have to train someone new, but I think that's best for you. That's a really nice thing for them to do. You know,
one of my HR leaders, like, at one of my first jobs, came to me. I remember she came to me, like, almost in tears. She was like, I think I want to go to law school. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and when she left, I remember I bought her diploma holder for her law degree. And I said, I was like, this is for you when you finish. And I wanted that. She's a lawyer now, and she's amazing and phenomenal. And I really do believe that, like, sometimes you're not serving that person, and you have to be realistic about that.
And that's what I like for the Gen Z generation. You know, every new generation gets, like, heat, you know, like the millennials at first, oh, they're terrible, lazy. Whatever.
We're still getting heat.
Now the Gen Zs are like, oh, look at these Gen Zs. But I think they're smart because they're looking at it, especially like the Gen Zs. And maybe I could say that because my kids are Gen Zs and I see all their friends are Gen Zs, is that they've been through a lot. You know, they came right after, like, 9/11 and the financial crisis and all this political craziness that's going on. And obviously with the pandemic, getting, you know, sent home from high school and college. So they're, like, hearted at a young age. And I think they get it. Like, life is short and it's precious. And, like, what am I going to do spending my time? And, like, I'm not happy. I'm not fulfilling anything. I'm not doing anything meaningful. I got to move on. And it makes sense.
I think I listened to a really great podcast about this. And it was on this very topic. Like, you become the dinner conversations you had during your formative years, right? So think about the Gen Zers, right? Like, they were having conversations at the dinner table when they were growing up about 9/11, and they were watching their parents lose their jobs. And they became the people to protect against that. right? Absolutely. Wow. That's why you see Gen Zers doing gig work all the time. That's why you see Gen Zers being a bit more individualistic in their, the way they work. They're not as big into teams. They're in it for themselves. They watch their parents lose their jobs.
Exactly. You see the financial crisis and it falls apart. And then you see the financial crisis where you see the parents losing their money. You know, it's like they realize, hey, I gotta watch out for myself. This is not gonna be easy.
Exactly. So you are a result of the dinner conversations when you're 12, right? Like, and I think there's a lot of truth to that, because I think about myself as a millennial, right? Like, I was growing up during, you know, I was 12 in the 90s, right? So that's what made me who I am.
God, I love this, like, wisdom. We could go all day, but I want to spare your time. But thanks for coming on the show, Kelly.
Thank you. This has been so much fun.
That's great. You're awesome.